Hey guys, it's Candace.
And it's Elena.
And you're listening to Cousins on Crime.
Candace.
How you doing?
I'm good. What you been up to?
You know, just mourning over the fact that spooky season is over.
Right.
But, it's really weird. I talked about how we went to Branson on last week's episode. I forgot to mention that they had already decorated for Christmas.
What?
Like, it was October, so we were there October 27th.
Okay, yeah.
Through the 29th.
Yeah.
And they already had Christmas trees. They were playing Christmas music.
Oh.
Me and my sister went to a nail salon, and there were two little girls, like, waiting for their mom. And they were watching Christmas.
Oh, my goodness.
It was like, I was like, what is happening? I asked the lady at the nail place, I was like, do y'all not celebrate Halloween? Y'all have just kind of skipped right over it. And she was like, no, we do.
I mean, like, not even Thanksgiving either.
Yeah, it was weird. But anyways, now we can get in Christmas mode.
Okay, right.
But I want to stay in a spooky state of mind for this episode.
Rewind.
My case tonight has it all.
Oh.
It has a bit of intrigue, lots of mystery, murder, and scandal.
Okay.
And maybe a little surprise at the end.
That seems like a lot.
Okay. Well, let's get into it then.
Okay.
So, Edward L. Doheny, I've heard it pronounced multiple ways, but that's how I'm going to pronounce it because it sounds like weenie.
Okay.
And I'm 5 years old. So Edward L. Doheny was one of the wealthiest men in America in the early 1900s.
Oh.
According to reporting by the LA Times, he discovered oil near the La Brea tar pits in 1892. Which heavily contributed to the boost in LA's economy at the time. I told you mine was old-timey, too.
You're right.
And yours was last week.
Yes.
So we're going back in time yet again. I could go really hard on the history of this family, but we haven't got all day.
Right.
So I'll give you the good stuff. Edward Lawrence Doheny. That's what the L was for. He was born in Fond du Lac, Wisconsin in 1856. He was a very adventurous kid, and he loved playing outside and looking for stuff. Valuable stuff. Now, when he got a little older and more capable, he began mining for gold.
Oh.
And then oil. He teamed up with a friend, Charles A. Canfield, and they were the first to strike oil in L.A.
Wow.
Like, mega oil. Edward married Carrie Luella Wilkins, and they had two children, Eileen and Edward Jr., who they called Ned.
Isn't that cute?
Sadly, Eileen died when she was just 7 years old. Now, I'm not sure if there was an overlap in their age. I don't know if she died before Ned was born.
Okay.
Or if he was born, you know, if he lived at some point before she died.
Okay.
But he was the golden boy, for sure. Now, Edward Sr. and his wife divorced, and he remarried Carrie Estelle Betzold. Now, another Carrie. Don't get confused. And they went on to have more children. But to keep the key players straight in the story, I won't go into, like, all the siblings and the family stuff. We're talking about Ned really. Okay. Like, the son of Edward, Ned. Ned Doheny is the main Doheny here. So he married his wife Lucy Smith in 1914 in Pasadena, California. And they moved into a mansion right next door to his father, which was a wedding gift. Isn't that lovely? Edward Sr., though, had purchased a 429-acre piece of land in Beverly Hills just 2 days before Ned's wedding.
Oh, wow.
And he had big plans for that mm-hmm. plot of land. He sliced off a beautiful 12.5-acre piece of land with views of downtown L.A. To give to Ned and his wife. But he didn't stop there. He spared no expense building Ned and his family, now equipped with 5 children, mm-hmm. a mansion on that land for them.
Wow.
Which was completed in 1928. Ned and Lucy were grateful for a new mansion. I mean, as one would be. Thank you. A new mansion? Of course. But the location and the grounds actually provided them a lot of privacy. They were a very high-profile family.
Oh, right.
Very wealthy, obviously, in the area. And they had been dealing with a huge scandal.
Uh-oh.
More on that later.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this English... I'm going to tell you a little bit about this mansion. This English Tudor-style house... House? Can you even call it a house? Building. I don't know any other word. Mansion. Gargantuan home. Was called the Greystone Mansion, and it resides in Beverly Hills. I deleted Beverly Hills. I don't know why. It resides in Beverly Hills and spans over 46,000 square feet.
Okay.
And has 55 rooms.
Wow.
55 rooms. I just...
Why do you need 55 rooms?
Well, I have some ideas. A painting room. A naked room. Oh. Where you could just...
Be naked?
Yeah.
Lock the door and nobody come in?
You could have a noodle room where you just had pasta.
Oh.
Noodles.
Okay.
Everywhere.
Sure.
You could have a shoe room. You could have a handbag room.
Okay.
You could have a...
Like just one gigantic closet.
Yes. You could have a TV room where there's like... Oh, well, I guess not back in that day, but today.
Well, yeah.
I'm thinking of, you know, my mind. You could have a shoe room. Did I already say that?
Yeah.
I think
I think you want
so
shoes.
That's six rooms right there I just came up with.
Okay.
Give me some more time. I might be able to think of 55 okay. total. There were garages, stables, kennels, service buildings, a pool, tennis courts, and Whoa. Beautifully landscaped grounds, all hidden behind a giant stone wall that lined the property. There was a parlor in the home, a 2-story billiard room.
Oh yeah. My goodness.
Chris would like
oh,
that.
Oh, yeah.
Bowling alley, a bar, trap. Doors. This is giving
oh, okay.
Bender vibes. Uh-huh. And secret passageways. Everything, like every iteration of a mansion you've ever seen on TV, in your wildest dreams, mm-hmm. this mansion had it.
Okay.
It had it all. Now, Timothy Doheny was the youngest of Ned's children. He gave an interview back in the 1980s about growing up in this house. He said, quote, "There are places in the cellar, places in the basement where you could get inside the walls. I never did make a complete trip from the lowest to the highest point, but I remember one of the places it used to start was in the gym, which was just off the upper hallway. The gym was on one level, and then there were 2 or 3 steps, and then it became the attic. There were a couple of doors up there where you could slip into the walls.
Oh.
There were some ladders and things like that. You could go all the way through the walls and come out through the trap door in the ceiling closet down in one of the guest rooms on the west side of the house. I mean, as he's like, end quote.
Right.
End quote. But as he's explaining all of this stuff, it's like, I'm thinking of the Winchester Mansion. Where yeah. there's just like this.
No.
All the, like, no rhyme or reason yeah. to this. Like, I don't know the history of why all this was.
I mean, if they're a wealthy family, prominent family in the area, maybe they needed somewhere to hide if someone yeah. came in, like a panic room.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. And I want one of those in my house because yeah. I'm thinking, like, that would be so cool to have. But having trap doors that lead to ceilings, that lead to, like, you can get in the walls, like.
Yeah. Nonsense.
But he also went on to say that there were. Like, he was talking about the trap doors that went down to the floor below. And he said you could even get down into the servants' quarters. Mm. Yes, they had servants. And you could end up in, like, their closet.
Oh.
He's like, I never did that, but it could be done.
How weird.
Yeah. So, according to a report, construction records indicated the cost to construct the estate was $3,135,563.63. And that was in 1929.
What in the world?
That amount of money in 1929.
Wow.
They had so much money, they were wiping their bum with $20 mm-hmm. bills.
Sounds like it.
Now, the Doheny family had it all. Beautiful homes, success in a cutthroat industry, and with that, a massive fortune and status in one of the most sought-after cities on the planet, Los yeah. Angeles. But when you're at the very top, there's only one way to go.
Where do you go?
That's down.
Oh.
The Doheny family would soon experience a very public downfall.
No.
That would be the subject of much debate.
Debate. What's that word?
The subject of much debate in the coming decades. Now, Lucy Doheny, the wife of Ned, is our main source for what happened the night in question. So we're going to go through the events the way the police had to, with this first-hand account from Lucy. So here we go. So it was a chilly night on Saturday, February 16th, 1929. Ned and Lucy had just gotten home from the theater and were getting settled in for bed when she said there was a call from the gate. You know, back then uh-huh. you had this gate
intercom.
And it called the main house and, you know, you open the gate for your guests. Well, it was Hugh Plunkett, Ned's assistant and chauffeur. He wanted to come in and talk to Ned. You see, Hugh had been there earlier in the day, and Ned had said something that really made him mad. It was explained to be something like a, quote, impulsive remark, end quote. Oh. Though I don't know what specifically was said. But Lucy was like, look, it's not a good time. You know, you both are upset, you yeah. know, just we're getting ready for bed. We just got back home. So she turned him away, but he didn't go home.
Mm-mm.
Mm-mm. No. Instead, he let himself through the gate with his pass keys because he was his assistant chauffeur. He for years had been helping him. So he did have a pass key and he let himself on the grounds.
Oh.
And from there, he made his way onto the property. Property. Why can't I talk? What is the matter with me? So he's on the property. Not long after Hugh had made entry into the home,
mm-hmm.
Ned found Hugh in the guest bedroom where Hugh usually stayed. It was like his unofficial room in the home because he mm-hmm. often stayed there. So Ned was like, my guy, we just asked you to go. Like,
yeah. What are you doing
you're
here?
You're now inside my house. You're not just through the gate.
Mm-hmm.
You're through the dough.
You let yourself
yeah.
in.
Yeah. So the two men talked. It was reported that they shared a cigarette and some drinks. And they'd been talking for a while when Lucy heard what she thought was a gunshot coming from the east wing of the mansion. But instead of calling police immediately, as one would do, she asked their family doctor, E.C. Fishbaugh, to accompany her to investigate. Apparently, the doctor was in Los Angeles watching a show, and he got a call from his maid saying, "You better get over to the Doheny house and quick." So Lucy waited a bit until he arrived. And it's said that he received the call to go urgently to their home around 10:30. So he didn't arrive until just before 11. So she's standing there like, she hears this gunshot. She calls on the doctor. I could just, like, almost 30 minutes standing there.
Yeah.
I just can't even imagine. Anyway, so she waits all this time, I guess holed up in her room, but she greeted him at the door. And once he got there, Lucy told the doctor that Hugh and Ned were in the guest bedroom. So she and the doctor went to the other side of the home towards where she heard the noise.
Oh my goodness.
And they find Hugh standing just outside the door. The door's kind of cracked open. And when he's caught, when he sees that they see him, he's like, "Don't come any closer."
Oh.
And just then he enters the room, shuts the door, and they hear another loud bang.
Oh.
Just as she heard before. So they assumed that was another gunshot. And the doctor went in to see what was going on, and he found Hugh shot in the head, and the gun was laying beside him. And further into the room, just around the corner, lay Ned Doheny.
Oh, no.
Laying on the floor, surrounded by a pool of blood, wearing only his undies and a silk bathrobe. He was also shot in the head. Now, according to an article published on the Los Angeles Public Library blog in 2013, Ned was still clinging to life at this point.
Oh.
Though barely. So near Ned was an overturned chair, and he was kind of located near the bed. Mm. Police were called, finally, an investigator with the DA's office in Los Angeles, Leslie White, along with a horde of other officers, arrived on scene somewhere around 2 a.m. So, I saw a report that once the men were discovered dead, Edward Sr. was called, and so other family members were called and brought in, and then the police arrived later. Now, I mean, I think that's pretty common for back then.
Yeah.
But maybe not that early, or maybe not that modern. I would say maybe in your time period in the 1800s, maybe that went on more. But then I would say the early 1900s, I would think, would be more. But who knows?
Yeah.
By daybreak, Ned's death was headline news, of course. Now, Investigator White wasn't ready to close this case because he didn't think this was a simple murder-suicide.
Oh.
It just didn't, like, there was stuff, just didn't seem right to him. Dr. Fishbaugh had omitted some things in his statement.
Okay.
Which was a little sus. He was like, his story kind of changed a couple times. Like the details of, like, the order of events. Ned had been shot at close range. There was soot on his head, but Hugh didn't have soot on or near his head wound.
And he supposedly shot himself.
He is the one who supposedly shot himself. Wouldn't that be at close range? Most suicides involving guns, I mean, you put that thing right to your head. You don't want to miss.
Right.
Okay? If you want to kill yourself, you would have stippling, you know? Another curious thing was the position of Hugh's body. He had a cigarette in his fingers, and he was face down on top of that hand with the cigarette.
Oh.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Smoking a cigarette, and then you fall forward? I don't know. It was all just a little, It could be argued that someone may have moved his body.
Okay.
But why?
Why? roll him over on top of his cigarette.
Yeah, why flop him over forward?
Right.
Yeah, I don't know. Now, the Doheny family spokesman recounted that Hugh was acting very erratically in the months leading up to the deaths. He'd been heavily medicated on sleeping pills because of toothaches.
Oh, boo.
Sorry to be triggering. And he and his wife were on the outs. So he seemed highly excited and nervous, was the actual quote. Highly excited and nervous.
Oh.
So according to the family, Ned and Hugh had argued earlier in the day, mm-hmm. like I said, and Hugh must have still been really salty about whatever they quarreled about. There has been controversy and speculation over the years as to what really happened in that room. These days, as much as we like, you know, to sometimes complain about investigative work in our cases, and they have an arsenal of investigative tools mm-hmm. and, you know, DNA and forensic tools that they can use. Back in that day, you know, they had eyewitnesses and they said, jolly good. Mm-hmm. Thank you very much. And, you know, they didn't really, but I mean, they heavily relied on eyewitness statements, right? To know what they were dealing with. There was an investigation, but the LA Times reported that it was, quote, brief, which led authorities to just say, okay, Hugh killed Ned and then himself. Now, Investigator White multiple times went to his superior and showed him evidence. It was all shut down.
Oh, no.
We don't know why, but it was shut down, case closed.
Poor guy. He's like, I'm trying to tell you something.
So some speculate that Hugh and Ned were engaged in a secret affair.
Oh.
And that Lucy killed them both when she discovered their secret. Others think maybe Hugh killed Ned and then himself to keep this affair secret and sort of take it to the grave type of thing. Here's something interesting that I came across and why I think people might have thought there was some kind of, you know, love affair going on. Ned and his family were Catholic, deeply religious.
Okay.
They donated heavily to the Catholic Church, but Ned was not buried in the Catholic Church cemetery. He was buried in a secular cemetery.
Oh.
A lot of people thought that was because he was gay and he was, I don't know, cast out of the church, but
there's no proof of that.
No, I think that part of the speculation is a bit silly because I found no reports to substantiate some love affair. I think it was a sensational headline. They wanted more to the story. The most likely story behind the murder, suicide, is best told by historian Richard Rayner, who told the LA Times in a report in 2002 that the Doheny family was involved in the Teapot Dome scandal.
Oh.
So let me tell you about that.
Please do.
Let's rewind.
Okay.
In 1922, before the deaths, before the mansion was ever even built, Interior Secretary Albert Bacon Fall, who was part of President Harding's administration, he had been leasing federal oil reserves on the sly to his friends.
Oh.
So this land was not to be, I mean, it was federal oil reserves, and they were trying to figure out what to do with it. They hadn't figured it out yet. They weren't ready to divvy it up, and he was dipping in. Mm-hmm. So his friends were Henry Sinclair and Edward Doheny.
Oh.
Edward Sr., who they were both oil executives. This particular oil reserve was called the Teapot Dome, hence the name. And it was the highest concentration oil reserve that they used for the shady deal. That's why it was called the Teapot Dome scandal.
Hmm.
According to Britannica, in 1920, the U.S. was consuming over 90% of the petroleum it was producing.
Wow.
So they couldn't keep up. Naval ships and automobiles were becoming more common during this day. So obviously oil was in high demand. So other companies were entitled to bid on this land, but not yet.
Oh.
The government was keeping it until...
Sounds about right. Yeah.
So, they were entitled to bid on those drilling rights, but they were not offered to them. Obviously, they were only offered to his friends on the DL.
Uh-huh.
Those drilling rights were estimated to be worth around $100 million in those days. In those days. I mean, you're talking $1.8 billion today.
Goodness gracious.
So what did Albert Baconfall get in return for this, you know, letting his friends come over and dip into the oil?
Well, do tell.
He received cash, bonds, and cattle.
Oh.
Pigs and cows.
That's funny because I was going to say pigs.
Yeah, pigs and cows. Edward Doheny sent his son Ned, accompanied with Ned's assistant Hugh Plunkett, to give Albert Fall $100,000 for a lease on one of the naval oil reserves.
Ooh.
So the Doheny family paid $100,000 to be able to
chump change.
Yeah. Which was nothing to them.
Right.
And they were getting millions upon millions upon millions upon millions upon millions.
Right.
In oil from this land. Now, other oil industry men were vying for access to this reserve. They were pissed.
Yeah.
So, they actually specifically voted in President Warren Harding into office because he was more for the oil industry. Oh. He actually was like, you know, Woodrow Wilson, who was the president before him, he was more for oil men. Harding was. So they were let's get Wilson out, Harding in, so that we can, you know, have more access to land and blah, 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 blah. So it was a big deal that they were being held back from this land.
Right.
They were pissed off.
For sure.
So one day, this guy named Leslie Miller, he's waiting in the wings. Like, he's like, I'm just going to go out there. I'm just going to go out there and see what all this is about. So he saw some trucks and equipment going to and fro the reserve, and he thought, what's going on? Like, nobody's supposed to have access to this reserve. Like, something's going on.
Mm-hmm.
So he called up Senator John B. Kendrick. After an investigation, things quickly unraveled for Albert and his friends.
Dun, dun, dun.
Yes. Albert was sentenced to prison time, although I couldn't find out how much prison time, but it was a lot. Henry Sinclair and Edward Doheny kind of scooted by without too much consequence. You can say Edward scooted by entirely because he was acquitted of all wrongdoing, but Henry got 6 months in jail. I'm not sure why the discrepancy there, but there you go.
Yeah.
So now that I've explained all of that to you, you should know that Hugh Plunkett, because remember, Ned and Hugh were the ones who took that $100,000 check to Albert on behalf of Ned's dad.
Right.
So now they're involved in this scandal.
Uh-huh.
Okay. So you should know that Hugh was actually set to testify in the Teapot Dome scandal before he and Ned were found dead in that room.
Oh.
Ned had been promised immunity for his part in the scandal, but Hugh, he hadn't. I mean, you've got Ned, who's prominent.
Yeah.
Hugh was not. He didn't have a leg to stand on. So the closer it got to Hugh having to testify in the case, he started to unravel more and more.
Uh-huh.
And because of this behavior, Ned tried to distance himself from Hugh.
Oh, no.
He was like, you're acting kind of crazy, and, like, I'm good, and, you know, I'm past that, and you need to just go on. At first, he was like, let's get you some help, because they were friends. They were friends for a very long time. But when Hugh refused all the medical care that he was being offered, like, by their personal family doctor, things kind of went off the rails. And Ned really began the process of cutting ties with him.
Mm-hmm.
That made matters worse for Hugh's mental state. Because here you have this dear friend who's prominent, has more money than you could even dream up.
Right.
And he's got you wrapped up in this mess, and he's seemingly gotten away with it, and you have to testify still.
Yeah.
And he's leaving you high and dry. He's like, yo, maybe that's what the argument was about the night
mm-hmm.
or the day of the murder. But the case was closed soon after that brief investigation, and to this day, it's considered solved.
Okay.
Murder, suicide, although speculators gonna speculate.
Yeah.
There's still gonna be questions and curiosities there. Now, Ned's father, Edward Doheny Sr., donated $1.1 million to the University of Southern California to build the Edward L. Doheny Jr. Memorial Library, which was opened in 1932.
Huh.
After Ned's death. That same year, Lucy Doheny, the widow of Ned, remarried Lee Batson, who was also an oil man.
Mm-hmm.
She likes them guys, them oily guys. And he moved into Greystone,
mansion
with her and her five children. They continued to live there with their full staff of about 15 people, cooks, kitchen and housemaids. Laundresses, as servants, and switchboard operators until about 1955. By the end of the World War II, all of the Doheny children had moved out of the mansion, leaving just Lucy and her new husband. It was too big for them. It was just excess.
Right.
So she had actually inherited the rest of that land. I told you Edward Sr. had bought like 429 acres and sliced off a piece for them. Well, she inherited the rest of that land when her mother-in-law passed away.
Okay.
And she was like, I can't even. Mm-hmm. So she sold it to a man named Paul Truesdale. Paul built his own house on, you know, down the way. Okay. He didn't want to live in Greystone. In fact, his wife didn't want to live there.
No, thank you.
She was like, it's a little too much. We're this rich. We're going to build our own mansion somewhere else. So the Greystone mansion was abandoned for so many years. I think like over 10 years. And people would get in there, like kids, high school kids would get in there and smash the windows, damage everything. I would want to just walk around.
Yeah. Check out the history.
I would probably just set up shop and just start living
squat.
In there. Squat. And because of those smashed windows, water and everything else was just blowing into the mansion, and it just started to deteriorate really bad. There was kind of a divided front when it came to what the city should do with the property, because Paul Truesdale didn't want it.
Okay.
And he was like, this is just rotting on my property. Some wanted it demolished. I mean, apparently it has views of the city, and apparently, like, it looms over the city so people could see it.
Oh my gosh.
Like, the whole city could see it, and they were just like, let's just tear it down. We don't want the memory of it looming over us. But the majority won, and it was purchased by the city of Beverly Hills in 1965.
Huh.
So it was ultimately restored, which cost many more millions.
Right.
And it was used for weddings and TV and movie locations.
Oh, okay.
So Witches of Eastwick, which is a movie from the 80s, it stars Jack Nicholson, was filmed there. I've never seen it. Did you see There Will Be Blood? It came out in 2007.
No, I have not seen
that. So that was filmed there. And it was actually about an oil tycoon and his son. I've never seen it.
Interesting.
I did watch the trailer. It doesn't seem to be the story of the Doenies. It didn't, like...
Just some kind of fictional
story. Yeah, maybe it was loosely based on the Teapot Dome scandal. I don't know. Other more notable movies that were filmed there include Spider-Man 3.
Oh.
Ghostbusters 2. And one of my all-time favorites, The Holiday.
Oh, that was a good one.
Yeah. If you haven't seen The Holiday, you're doing it wrong. I know it's November, and I said this before, but I feel a bit deprived that I didn't get to do spooky tales. You know, we did take a week off in October.
I know. I'm sorry about that.
Shame on us. We just wasted so much time. But let's pretend it's October, okay? Just for a minute.
Okay.
Ghost encounters have been reported at Greystone Mansion.
Okay.
So many, in fact, that there was a book written about it called Ghosts of Greystone. Can you imagine? So it was written by a man named Cleet Keith, who'd worked at the mansion for 22 years.
Oh.
Yeah. He interviewed workers and guests. One visitor of the property said she heard a woman's voice in the home, but when she looked towards the voice, there was no one there. Another visitor said that he saw taps turning, you know, faucets turning themselves on and off. Weird.
Uh-huh.
And a photographer that visited the very room that Ned and Hugh died in said he smelled rotting flesh there. But the most reported sighting is the ghost of a woman wandering the halls and actually smells like lilac perfume.
Oh.
Some have seen pools of blood emerging in the room where the deaths occurred and seeping out of nail holes in the walls.
That's just a bit excessive. I'm sorry.
That's like, what is it? The Shining?
Oh, yeah.
And hundreds of other reports of paranormal activity over the years have come to light. Maybe some of it's true. Who knows? I say, let me go stay there and I'll be the judge.
Uh-huh.
I'd love to meet some ghosts. The reason I don't know if these ghost stories could be legit is... Now, I didn't mention this earlier. I actually read it somewhere and forgot to dig deeper.
Okay.
If I read it somewhere, I'm going to scour to see if I can find, like, confirmation.
Yeah.
But one report said that one of the Doheny children had a friend sleep over one night, and she fell out of the window from the third floor.
Oh, my gosh.
And died. But there... I didn't see many reports of a child ghost.
Okay.
And also the lady.
Yeah,
we don't know of a lady who died there. Like, why isn't it Ned's ghost that people are seeing? You know, that would be the most believable. So, I don't know. But, you know, I just got to put it in there because I love my ghosties. And that's all I have for you for the Greystone Mansion. There's so much history and the family.
Yeah.
Is so interesting. Like Edward and how he made, like how he discovered the oil and everything.
Right.
This episode would have been.
So long.
Like a 15 parter if I would have gone into all of that.
Oh my gosh.
But, yeah, if you ever want to, like, do your own research on the Doheny family, there's a lot there. But as far as the murder, what do you think happened?
So, a couple of questions I have. Hugh, so the wife called the doctor and waited 30 minutes for him to show up.
Yeah.
So in that 30 minutes, what was Hugh doing before he supposedly shot himself? What was he doing?
What was he doing?
Why would he stay there for 30 minutes and not flee?
Or why wouldn't he go kill Lucy? Because she witnessed it. She heard the gunshot. Why wouldn't he kill her?
Maybe he thought she was on the other side of the house and couldn't hear it. Yeah, I don't know.
And to your point, he would have left.
He would have just killed. Anybody would have just left.
Exactly.
Unless he was just like in shock. Oh my gosh, I just did this to my friend.
Yeah.
Maybe he moved him over.
That's why there's so much controversy here. And that's why Investigator White did not believe the story that Lucy and the doctor gave. Because that doesn't make any sense.
It doesn't. And you mention the rooms. These
55 rooms. 46,000 square feet.
These trap doors that you can get in. Was there a trap door in that room that someone could have shot both of them and fled through those doors?
Yeah, and it's the family, the Doheny family, they're the ones who drove the police to shut everything down. I don't know if it's because of the Teapot Dome scandal. I think it was.
Yeah.
I think that somebody came in and killed them both.
Right.
I think that somebody may have had Hugh, like, at gunpoint and had him call into the house to get on the property. And they were gonna come in and kill Ned.
Okay.
I don't know.
Right.
But I don't believe it happened the way.
Yeah. I think if it really was Ned, he would not have stayed for 30 minutes.
No. He wouldn't have.
Wow.
Or if he was so strung out and so erratic, like, maybe he just paced around for 30 minutes and he was bugging out of his mind. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, I guess it's possible, but it just is not likely.
Exactly. Yeah.
Huh.
So, a little mystery there for you.
Yeah.
It gave you guys something to think about.
That was a good one. Thanks for sharing.
Yeah.
Are we still doing thankful?
Yeah. Let's do thankful through the end of November.
Yeah. Okay.
So, what are you thankful for?
Okay, I'm thankful that God answers prayers. So a few days ago, Chris is on this trip. He went to Maryland. He gets to Maryland and he's staying in this hotel. He's going to get up in the morning and travel to Indiana with his friend. So he tells me he's on the way to the hotel. And so I'm thinking, he always calls me when he's away. He always calls me when he's going to bed or whatever. So I thought I would get a phone call before he fell asleep. I didn't get a call. So I look on Life 360 because we don't have iPhones and we have Androids. We have to get Life 360. So I look on Life 360. It says his phone is in the middle of a street.
What?
And okay, I'm like, okay, maybe it's just not updated. And so I wait, for an hour, I kept updating
it. Oh my gosh, I've been out of my mind.
I was, like, okay, my true crime mind. Yes. I was freaking out. He was not answering his phone. I called, 25 times.
Oh, and no.
It's just showing his phone's in the middle of the street. I'm like, did he get in a wreck and go to the hospital? After an hour of not knowing, I'm calling the hospitals there asking.
Oh, my gosh.
But I'm praying the whole time, God, please let him be okay. God, please let him call me back. And I called stupid me didn't even know what hotel he was staying at.
I was about to say.
So I'm calling hotels around the area that I know he's at, asking if they wouldn't give me any.
Yeah.
Answer of, their guests staying there. But so right after I got off the phone with her, the hotel, he calls me back. Anyway, so he was fine. He was asleep. He got to the hotel and just fell asleep. So Yeah. I was a mess.
Say, well, I'm coming up there to kill you.
Like,
you better be dead, because if you're not, I'm going to kill you.
Actually, just before he called, I was looking at flights to go there, because I'm I can't sleep now. I'm not going to be able to go to sleep. How can I go to sleep if something's wrong with him? And I don't know.
Yeah.
I felt helpless. And so, yeah, I was so relieved. So, yeah, I'm thankful that God answers prayers, because my husband's safe. I kind of like my husband.
Yeah,
and
a little bit.
Yeah. He's my bestie for the restie. So, anyway.
Yeah, that's happened before with Daniel, a lot, because he's a very heavy sleeper.
Oh. See, and Chris isn't.
It actually happened when we were in Vegas.
Oh, no.
Yes. And I was in Vegas, and he was home with our three girls. So I was like, oh, my God.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that's scary. That's even scarier that Chris would wake up.
Yeah, because I was he doesn't sleep this hard.
Yeah, he would never, he would definitely answer my call. Oh,
that's scary. Yeah. All right, so enough about me. What are you thankful for?
Enough about you. I'm thankful for the cooler weather.
Yes. Yes, ma'am.
I, as you guys know, just moved to Texas from Charleston, and we don't really get winters in Charleston, South Carolina.
Oh, okay.
It's very tropical climate.
Mm-hmm.
So our winter last year was so mild that,
aw, man,
I didn't bust my jacket out once. So here we are, end of October, and it's cold.
Now, it's been rainy, and I've wondered that about how you and the girls are handling the rainy, cold weather.
Well,
how
is
that?
We're used to rain. It rains a lot in Charleston. But it was funny. I was getting the girls in the car this morning for school. Uh-huh. And, they can't wear their jackets in the car.
Oh, yeah.
So we were going from the front door to the car.
Oh,
with no jackets,
no.
But blankets, yeah. And Hazel's face was like,
What is this?
It wasn't we spent 5 weeks in England and France last fall. And it started to turn cold when we, right before we left. So they wore their jackets and it was pretty cold. But she was just so confused, the look on her face. And she was just shivering. Aww. And I thought, y'all are going to have to get used to this because, Texas does. I mean, and we get snow here.
Yeah.
Once or twice a year.
Yeah, so. And the state shuts down.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I'm so thankful for the colder weather because I look good in a sweatshirt.
Yes, ma'am.
Sweatshirt, okay. And sweatpants. I mean, where's the runway?
Exactly.
Because, that is what I feel good in.
Yeah. You can work that.
I can work it so hard.
Yeah.
I can work a jacket, anything baggy,
yeah.
Anything puffy. I also love a candle, and I also love my fireplace and blankets. And I didn't really get to enjoy that last, winter season. So I'm so thankful for that.
Yeah.
I know that seems silly, but it's the little things. It's the cozy things.
No. I mean, hey, last week I said chapstick, so your reason is much better than that.
Hey, I usually say food, so I think this is a step up. But yeah, that's what I'm thankful for.
I love it.
I'm thankful for you.
Oh, stop.
All right, guys.
All right. Okay. Well, this was great. Let's do it again sometime.
Let's do it. Okay. We'll see you next week.
Bye.
Bye.
Well, thank you for listening to Cousins on Crime. If you're enjoying our podcast, please leave us a 5-star rating so that other true crime fans can find us.
If you have any case suggestions or just want to say hey, email us at cousinsoncrime@gmail.com. And be sure to follow us on Instagram, where we post case photos and information at Cousins on Crime Podcast.